Content warning, y'all. We have lots of fun making this podcast, but remember, we watch a lot of R-rated films, use language that reflects that, and joke about heavy topics to create levity around these themes. If that doesn't feel safe or could be triggering, please take care of yourself. We want you to have fun listening too. This also means we might not be suitable for children. Oh yeah, and we spoil the end of all the movies we pod about. Thanks for listening.
So let that be a lesson to you, kids. Don't listen. By kids, I mean people my age. Don't listen to the Pixies.
Speaking of getting sunk, this movie really fucked with me last night. Apparently,
well, that's right.
I mean, I got stoned.
You got what now? Pwned?
Pretty much. And I had some sips.
Somebody
of
hit
your
you with a noob tube.
I had some sips of your delicious bourbon barrel wine. It was the bourbon
light
barrel,
on
right?
The bourbon barrel, I'll say.
Light on the bourbon.
It didn't.
Light on the barrel, is what. That's how I'm sorry. I'm trying to think of how I would describe it. Light on the barrel. Yeah, it was.
On the barrel, heavy on the
wine. It was a little bland? No, I don't know if bland. It was just like. It felt not super complex to me. Flavor.
That's super, yeah. My review was it was slightly more complex than, complex is the word I didn't have, but exactly the word I wanted. I think I said nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
Slightly more complex than like the best.
Boda box, yeah.
Boda box I get.
Yeah. Right, yeah, that's how I felt.
Which is usually good enough.
Like right.
Some of them have been, some of those batches have been real pretty good.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Light hot black.
But I just got into not a good space. Oh. And like I was a little too overwhelmed. Like, remember I told you to feel my heartbeat?
Yes.
Because my heart was like racing and shit and I couldn't calm down. The peppercorn helped a little bit, but I was just too something. And the ending, like, I was really into
it. Well, this movie is visually a lot.
It's visually, I like it a lot visually, but I was actually fine until the ending with the circus shit happened.
Well,
and I was
don't
like,
don't ruin it yet.
Wait a little bit to ruin it. That's what, like,
is that what broke you?
The end. I was just like, it just threw me so hard.
It's a radical shift.
And I think it gave me enough time to like kind of let the rest of it sink in that I was like, yeah. I was like, not, yeah. And it wasn't, yeah, I think it was just like, I realized that I had just essentially watched a movie about like religious trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh. It was like, it was a lot of what I was expecting and not at all what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Like, there was a lot of, like, crazy shots and, like, really, like, it was very experimental. But it wasn't. It was really, like. It was really interesting. I found that I'm sure this is not what he intended. Listening to any part of the commentary, this is not at all what he wrote it to, right?
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, the writer and director intended, but it's so heavy on. It really felt like it was an examination of like the. Like demonization of women, especially in religion and around religion, because all of the things like, it's very interesting to, like, the way that, Ashley Judd's character, Callie, was, like...
She's only temptress.
Yeah.
Harlot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever. Whore. Yeah. All those things. A witch.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Or... Oh, what else was I going to say? I had a third one. And it was not virgin, because she's not that ever.
No.
Yeah. She's not represented as, like, pure...
Right. But, like, she's... When she talks... So, like... Okay. So, first, before we get really into it.
Victim. That's what I was going to say.
Oh, I was like... I was going to say victim, but I'm like, I'm sure that's not what he meant. So, I'm not gonna suggest victim.
It less archetypical.
Yeah.
Than those other two roles, but...
Well, anyway, yeah. Follow us on Patreon.
ZNK Pod on all the platforms.
Yeah, ZNK Pod on Patreon.
If you're a patron,
ZNK Pod on
you could be listening
TikTok.
On a Friday.
We're doing Brendan Fraser, and apparently the Fraser stands are all about our Twitter, so y'all better get on that.
Ride the Tigris River
so
Euphrates.
It's the Passion of Darkly Noon.
You got it.
And I only retain that because his name was Darkly Noon, so they say it a bunch. So I was able to retain that. That was the hardest part for me, was Darkly Noon. I was like, I'm never going to retain that. And then it was just like Darkly Noon over and over again. So Brendan
Fraser.
Blendon Fraser plays Darkly Noon, who is the movie starts.
Before we get too much further, I want to say I had that. Before we went into the theater, the time a lot of time has lapsed. I had the privilege to we watched the movie, then I went home and got the DVD and watched it with commentary.
Correct.
In between when we spoke last in the lobby, if you're a patron.
Mm-hmm.
So we watched it. Blind, except for, you know, having seen the trailer.
Yeah.
And then I went back this morning and watched most of it with commentary. I skipped around, but...
Yeah.
I learned a lot from the commentary.
Yeah.
I'm very glad I did it. I've never done that since at least since we started the pod.
Yeah. Fucking Christ. These gnats are going crazy.
So...
Yeah, so basically the movie starts out with, like, Brendan Fraser just, like, stumbling through the woods and a guy almost hitting him with his truck.
Yep.
And he takes him to the house of this girl named Callie, who's played by Ashley Judd. And, you know, I think it's really interesting because you don't know at first because she's very, like, it's that thing of, like, she's either really innocent or she's really... Or she's not, you know, because she's, like, really, like, it's that thing, though, of, like, it very much is presented, like.
Born sexy yesterday?
No. Like, she's doing things, like, it's really hot, so she's rubbing ice on her chest.
Yeah.
And it's, like, oh, she's doing that for him. No, it's fucking hot, and she's rubbing ice on her chest. I've fucking done that before. Like, it's just, like, you know, but it's one of those things where it's, like, the perception is always, like, from Brendan Fraser, he's seeing, like, she's trying to tempt me.
Right.
And it's, like, a very interesting thing where she's, like, wearing very little clothes, you know, and all this stuff. But to her, she's, like, her representation of things, like, you know, because she finds out that he's super religious and she gets a little, like, we should probably talk about that. You know, she's, like, kind of immediately uncomfortable. You kind of get the feeling that she doesn't have a good, like, she's been burned by the church, essentially. She's been burned by Christianity.
Oh.
She's been burned by that because she says, like, Roxy took the story of her, like, being a really horrible person and, like, spread it around town. And so everybody thinks she's a harlot. Everybody thinks. But in reality, what happened was she was a child. And she was an innocent child, and an adult man, like, refused to, you know, like, behave and tried to assault her. And it's interesting because she says he, like, died trying.
Yeah.
Or he died in the middle of it.
Right.
And then she says that Clay has a temper and he does. And uh-huh. so, and like Roxy, and why would like Roxy and Clay have nothing to do with each other kind of thing? So I'm like, oh, did Clay, and why would she love Clay so much? I mean, you know, like for that amount of time, you know, like she met him when she was like 15.
Oh, so maybe Clay.
So I assumed, I thought that was going to be revealed. I assumed that Clay like walked in on what was happening and killed his father. And the mom is like, oh, she, you know, did all of this stuff and she killed him and, you know, and like isn't responding to Clay's role in it at all because all she sees is that her son isn't her son anymore or something like that.
Right. So if I can back up a little bit.
Yes, please.
Just to lay the foundation a little more. Jude is the character's name in the truck.
Yes.
Played by Lauren.
Girl, what? Girl, I don't know.
Brain broke. Fuck.
Lauren Gus or something.
Moment. He was in Billy Bathgate, which I haven't seen. Lauren Dean. But that's...
Yeah, Lauren Gus, like I said.
Gus and Dean. And DeLuca.
So... Yes.
And he brings the as-yet-unnamed Darkly to... Callie's house.
Yeah.
Which is in the middle of the woods.
Yeah.
Seemingly he was already, that's where he was headed anyway, because he sort of makes deliveries back and forth for them.
Uh-huh.
This is a thing I did not, I should have put together, but did not.
Uh-huh.
In why there's all these references to coffins. That's what Clay makes.
Yeah.
Because
when he's first putting something in the truck, it's a child-sized coffin.
Yeah, right. And I think I appreciate
it
from the
comic. I only figured that out, though, because I was like, what the fuck is that supposed to be?
Yeah.
And then he said something like about like Clay making coffins, and I was like, oh, fuck, that was a little tiny coffin. I was like, that's so fucking dark.
Yeah.
To have just, like, the quick, like, it's not mentioned, it's not talked about. It's literally just a little baby coffin.
Yeah. So it gets established when Jude brings Darkly to Callie that Clay also lives there, but he's not gone.
Around. Yeah.
We don't know when he's coming back. Mm-hmm. Jude is like, well, maybe this is it. Maybe he's never coming back.
Yeah.
This time. And I think we get, if it's not explicitly stated by this point, we do get the impression that they're sort of on the outskirts on purpose because they've sort of been ostracized or whatever.
Yeah. Because he says, like, you could just go into town and get your own supplies.
Now, you should come to town to get them, you know.
Give everyone the satisfaction of staring at me. Whispering and judging, I can live without that. Besides, I have you to fetch things for me.
And then, so Jude leaves, and then, you know, next day, what?
Sorry, no, I'm just remembering how Callie goes through his stuff and finds his Bible. And then the next day when he wakes up, she's like, your clothes were ruined, so I burned them. What the fuck? It's so fucking dramatic.
I know. Also, I thought it was an odd choice that when she's going through his clothes, you get a shot, like she picks up his pants and goes through them, and then you see a shot of them falling on the ground, like a separate shot from, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, what I assume is she's going through them, and when she doesn't find anything, she just throws them on the ground.
Oh,
and
yeah, it's what clear what's happening to me. Okay. I just thought it was funny that we got two separate perspectives.
Okay. I guess I just don't get the humor in it.
I meant peculiar.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
It made sense in my head. I think...
Well, to me, it gave a weight that I'm like, is something going to happen? Are we going to get it?
Right, yeah.
Anyway.
I think it was hilarious that that giant ass Bible is just in his pants pocket or something. Like,
I think it was supposed to be his jacket pocket, but yeah, it is.
She
huge.
Picks up his jacket, or maybe she does. Yeah, but yeah, how it's, does it fit?
It's, well, and more importantly, I think it's hardbound. Is the thing like it's a
yeah, and like I mean, sure, I'm sure ministers' clothing is like, you know, they probably have it special made, you know, to
for
hold
Bible
a
pockets.
Big ass Bible.
Anyway, so the next day he wakes up, mm-hmm. and we get his some backstory, which is that he was part of a small community who lived by God's words.
I'm so sorry, but that whole explanation of his, I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Which
because
part?
He's like, at first he's like, I guess it was, I'm sure it was a cult, but he was like, the way he describes it is both like, you know, because he's saying, sorry, it's just like, it was so hard for me to understand. Because he,
yeah.
first of all, he was talking in whispers. He was like.
And with a stammer.
So he's talking, but he says like. I'm sure you'll put in the clip or some or a clip of what he says, and listening back will be like, oh, this makes sense. But like from what I could hear,
yeah,
it was like, oh, we had like we were in a community and we all lived by God's word. But then my parents got ostracized because nobody wanted to live by God's word. And then the helicopters came.
Townspeople, they don't like us. Because
you were different.
The police came. They told us we can't stay there anymore. We have to leave. We can't live the way we want to. The townspeople came too. And then they surrounded us. And they were screaming at us all the time, calling us names. Doing everything they can to make us surrender. We won't change to please them. Cut off our food, power, water. There's helicopters circling overhead all day and night. Playing music really, really loud. But it's them who are wrong. They're the heretics. God's on our side.
What? Like...
Yeah, it's a little convoluted. And I think that's on purpose.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I figured it was. But I was just like...
Especially after living... living. After living through the commentary. you know, there's a lot of things that you're like, is that a choice? This seems contradictory. Yes, it's all a choice. So I appreciate that. Like, I feel confident now in saying... You know, there's... I do often enjoy... the ambiguity of not knowing what is intended.
Correct.
You know?
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons I often, or usually don't listen to commentary.
Right. I like that he's, I just like that the writer was like, I don't know what this ending means. Maybe I never will. And I'm like, you
I
fucking
know.
Wrote it, bro.
I know.
Anyway, go ahead.
Kind of makes me mad, but.
I know.
He, listening to the commentary, endeared me to him, so.
A little bit. I was a little annoyed by how he was like, I just wanted, I don't know.
So the understanding I made from what Darkly says in that scene is that they were in a town, mm-hmm. and their little community was a subset in that town, right? And they got sort of pushed further and further out of the main population.
Okay.
And then at some point the cops got involved, but that the violence... quote, you know, like as far as like shots fired or the attack on their compound or what have you, started from the townsfolk,
right?
But escalated rapidly. I just imagine it as like a Waco type situation,
right? That's what I was,
which I think is meant to be being evoked,
right?
But
and that
like,
would make sense with how she was,
but
like,
but with townsfolk involved,
yeah,
mucking it up. So like nobody knows who shot first, but it quickly exploded because cops.
Gotcha.
That's how I read it.
Yeah, and that makes sense with how Callie is like, I want to talk to you about your parents and their religion.
Uh-huh.
It makes sense if that's what was going on, why she would be like, hey, Don't do that here.
Oh, yeah, right. We don't. And later when she says, don't spoil it.
Yeah.
What the fuck? I would like to interject some things I learned from the commentary.
Bless.
First, he had storyboarded out the attack on the compound. Like, that was going to be a pre-credit sequence.
Oh, wow.
It didn't happen because I guess budget? The budget kept getting slashed.
Hearing how the end was shot,
exactly.
I'm surprised they shot what they did.
Yeah, he said originally we're going to have 9 weeks to shoot. It got cut repeatedly down to 6 weeks.
Okay.
And he said then we lost half a week to weather.
Oh, fuck.
So...
Wow.
5.5 weeks, 4.5 weeks or something. They shot everything.
Oh, my God.
That's on location, I believe.
It was all shot in Germany.
It was all shot in Germany. However, not all of it was shot in the forest.
Right. Some of it was
A lot of it was shot on... Yeah. Like, apparently all the interiors of the house were on set.
Yeah.
On a studio. The cave was built. That was...
Okay.
A built set.
I was wondering, though, because it seemed to... Well, because... So, Keith was like, where... You know, like, the outdoor shots.
Yeah.
And, like, he was like, where the hell could this have been? And I was pretty sure... I thought it looked similar to The Last of the Mohicans, which I'm pretty sure was shot in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, it's probably North Carolina. And I looked it up, and it was, like, literally the entire film was shot
Saxony. In
Germany. I was like, what?
Yeah, okay, and it was one of my first comments, because the first shots are, like, these gorgeous panoramic, long...
I'm going to look up Last of the Mohicans, and it's probably going to be, like, Germany.
Saxony. Bavaria. And I think, you know, like, it's one of my favorite things is to try to place things geographically and, like...
Yeah.
You know how, if you have a Windows computer, when you first... Windows first comes
computer.
Up, you'll get an image that Windows shows you. And mine are such that they're often landscapes, and I like trying to guess where they are.
Oh, well, yeah. I really hate the landscapes they show 90% of the time. That's why I was like...
Ooh. But what was baffling to me was how wooded it was, but also how you had these giant, like, mesas and rock formations. That's what was tripping me out.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming it was in the States because of...
Right. Right, actors. It being an independent film.
Yeah. So, and then from the commentary, he says, he was like, one of the things he wanted from those... opening shots was for it to feel a little bit alien.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
And the cinematographer said, well, okay, what do you want it to look like? And he says, like, I want it to look like Mars. So,
damn.
Mission accomplished in that I was boggled. And
no, I was right. All the Last Mohicans was shot in North
Saxony.
Carolina.
Saxony.
In Saxon, North Carolina.
So they did not shoot the compound attack scenes, and he said the movie's better for it.
Yeah,
you know, like
totally,
the ambiguity of it is good. And one of the things I appreciate about the movie is the conflicting narratives. You don't really know what has happened, right?
Right, like, exactly.
You don't. All you have is everyone's telling of it.
Yeah.
So
which...
we only know what Darkly says.
Yeah.
About his past. We only know what Roxy says about her past. We only know what
Callie says. Yeah.
And we get a tiny bit of, you know, sort of impartial observer from Jude.
Right.
But not a whole lot, you know, and he mostly is just, I feel like, there to pad out and support Callie's description of things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What else was I going to say about that scene? So, Philip Ridley's first film is The Reflecting Skin, which I haven't seen, but now I really want to watch. And it was shot in Alberta.
Gotcha.
And apparently, like, a lot of the drivers or local folks who he encountered while shooting the film would tell him about how there had been a cult in the area a few years ago, a few years previous.
Oh, when he was filming the reflective skin?
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay. I was like, that's such a coincidence. Oh.
Sure is. Wait till you hear what I say next. From which a young man had run away and made it to Calgary, which is a big city, mm-hmm. and apparently had kind of lost it once being overwhelmed by the city. So that was the spark for this story.
Wow, interesting. I wanted to mention something. Something that I found interesting in what you were saying with, like, the telling of, like, we don't see what happened. We are told what happened, and we're told different perspectives from different people, which is very accurate to reality, which is interesting because it's a surrealist film, but it's super. But something that I thought was, like, really important, and it's what made, to me, it's, I mean, obviously, also, like, being in a similar sort of, like, the way that Callie lives, and, you know, it's like, I related a lot to that. You'll be surprised.
Because we live in the middle of the woods.
No, just because I'm a straight white woman.
Oh, yeah, fair. Blonde.
Anyway, so...
Well, you never wore bras.
It's true.
Neither do I, for that matter.
No, it's because you make coffins. You're constantly creating death,
so to speak,
canisters.
Death canisters. Welcome to the stage, death canisters. Blast beats. Also, from the commentary, I learned that we'll get to it later where this comes from. But havoc with the ripples was something somebody said, and then they all agree that sounded like a 70s punk band.
Nice, yeah.
And they created a whole
mythology
around this band.
So when she's sitting and she's trying to have, like, a conversation with Brendan Fraser's. This is something that I really hated about it. His name is Darkly Noon. First name Darkly, last name Noon. And she was like, I refuse to call you Darkly, so I'm just going to call you Lee. And I hated that because the amount of times people are like, I refuse to call you Z. I'm going to call you something else. And I'm like, no, that's not how names work.
That's white person thing to do to someone with
a name that they...
Yes, especially a name that is not Western European.
Yeah.
In origin.
You know, I'm just uncomfortable with your name, so I'm going to call you something else, okay? Like, no, that's not how names work. You don't get to do that. Like, if you have trouble saying someone's name.
Oh, your name's Ming-Na. I'm going to call you Ching-Chong. Oh, my
God, I can't believe that. I was telling Keith about this story I read where Ming-Na was talking about.
Which, honestly, I would say for English speakers, professionals like myself. Ching-Chong is harder to say than Ming-Na.
That's fair. But also, like, the fact that, like, I was saying how I think it's really fucking, it's so fucking lazy and, like, so nonsensical, the things that people pick on. And I was like, I remember reading that and being just like, this is, like, the thing. I don't know how to talk about it where it doesn't sound like I'm like, I just can't believe people are racist. That's not what I mean. And I'm not I just wish racists were more imaginative. That's not what I'm saying.
No, that's cool.
What I'm saying is that they don't hear how stupid they sound is what I mean.
Yeah.
They're saying this and they're like, yeah, this makes sense. I'm going to make fun.
Burn.
Yeah. It's like, what do you think you're accomplishing here? What do you think you're accomplishing here? It's stupid. Anyway. So she's talking to him. I think it's when she's trying to talk to him about, like, his dogmatic perspective on Christianity. And then you hear, like, then, you know, you don't know who it is at the time, but gunshots.
Oh, the gunshots, yeah.
Yeah, and, like, it's shooting at the house.
Right.
So Callie grabs the fucking, like, shotgun or whatever and goes outside and starts, like, shooting into the woods. And she's, like, yelling. She's like, why don't you show your face? Like, what are you... I don't know. She's just, like, being confrontational. But the gunshots keep happening. And Darkly's, like, freaked out. He's like, what the fuck? And she's like, they're not gonna... They're not trying to hit me. They're trying right. to... And he's like, you know, he's like, why... Why are they shooting? And she says... They just want me to know they're here and they're, like, watching or whatever.
Yeah.
And then later, he says, like, you're the... When he meets Roxy,
right.
who you find out is Clay's mother.
Right.
Clay being Callie's partner. He says, oh, it was you
mm-hmm.
who was shooting at Callie. He was like, mm-hmm. why were you doing that? And she says, I just want her to know that I'm here and I'm watching and waiting or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exactly what Callie says. Like, she yeah. says it the same way.
Right! It's not meant to hurt me. It's just meant to let me know that you're out there!
What'd you go and do a thing like that for?
To remind her that I am still here. Watching and waiting.
So that, to me, made Callie a more reliable narrator. Than Roxy, because Callie wasn't making it up. She wasn't being hyperbolic. She wasn't saying things that didn't happen. She's saying the reason is this, because that's the reason that yeah. she was given. So that's what she's saying. So it made, I don't know if that was intentional, but for me, that's when I was like, oh, Callie's the one that's being honest. Like, Callie's the only one in this that's, like, actually being truthful.
Right.
And even when she's talking to Jude and Clay, when, like, Darkly and Clay get in a fight and Clay goes, no. Like, Clay kicks him out and, like, or they kick him out. They're like, yeah, you mm-hmm. can't be here anymore. And Darkly goes away. Jude's like, where did he go? And she's like, I don't know. And then Clay leaves and she's like, I didn't want to say anything in front of Clay because I knew that he would try to find... Like, he would go after Lee and right. he would try to hurt him or he might do something to him. She's not saying, don't tell Clay I said this. No, she's saying, I don't want things to escalate.
Right.
Like, she's being, and she's not pretending, like, she's not pretending. She's saying, I didn't say this in front of Clay because I do not want this situation to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where he is.
Right.
And then she's like, okay, go get him. Like, she's the right. one. She's seemingly, like, I think Clay and Jude, like, Callie, Clay, and Jude seem to be the most level-headed. I think Clay is, like, questionable a little bit because...
Well, he's meant... The film definitely makes right. him questionable.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're basically told he's got a temper, but, like, I don't really... I don't feel like he's as volatile as he's, like, yeah. described. But, like...
Also, he's mute?
Yes. So, which I think is interesting because it seemingly is, like, that's Roxy's way of, like, infantilizing him, which feels Ooh. Accurate because she's, like, my precious silent boy, you know, but Ooh. She, like, infantilizes him, which lines up with autism, but, you know, like, being infantilized, like, he's an adult. He's just, and he's not, and it was interesting because he says, how come you can't talk? And Clay points to his, like, neck,
mm-hmm.
implying that, like, he just can't, like, right. like, it doesn't work or whatever,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was interesting because it's not, like, just never felt like it or anything, you know, it's, like...
It's not the quiet.
Yeah, well, yeah, right, it's one of those things where it's, like, it's just, like, basically, like, okay, I can't because I can't. You know, right. and I kind of appreciated that, you know, like, yeah, right. you know.
And it's never really brought up again.
Right. Yeah. I mean, oh, what was I saying about, yeah, like Roxy infantilizes Clay and like, there's a lot of like things that are really, yeah, it's really interesting. Like the way that the characters. And I really, really liked how Roxy was like, she's a witch. And he's like, how do you know? And she's like, I knew the second I saw her that she wasn't as innocent as she was acting. And I'm like, that's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what it's like. That's exactly what it's like to be like a woman in the South well, that isn't really Like, I mean, not specifically right, but like especially, I mean, like in the Bible Belt, like with a lot of religion around you. Like Southern religion is a specific thing that's like really, I mean, like there's other kinds of, there's religious dogma everywhere. There's, you know, it's all over the U.S. It's not something that's
but
like the Bible Belt is where like most of the, I mean, you have like,
I mean, it's called the Bible Belt for a reason, right?
Right. It's called the Bible Belt for a reason, but you have a lot of rollover from like, you have a lot of rollover from, the, Confederacy sort of.
Right.
There's a lot of like Old Testament values in the Bible Belt that aren't other places. And it was like, I felt like the way I felt like there was a subtlety and a depth in the way that they portrayed like the demonization of Callie that was like really, really, it really struck me. It really struck me the way that she is so heavily, and everything seen, and the part where she says, "Is this my fault? Did I do this?" Mm. I was like, "Fuck!" Because that is exactly what happens. Like, men come to you, men like chase you, men fantasize about you. They turn you
and
into
then
something,
blame you.
And then it's your fault that they turned into this monster.
So much of that happens though from the little we get from Roxy.
Yes.
And
yes.
But it's so, it's done so deftly that it's like, I mean, nothing about this movie feels particularly like organic, you know what I mean? Like
Right, yeah.
And, you know, after listening to the commentary, I know that's basically
correct.
By choice, but like, as sort of like artificial as him running into Roxy is, her telling of things is makes perfect sense and totally flushes out a lot of the what you're talking about around around Callie's stuff, and you know it makes me think that's a lot. It's it feels like a Stephen King character a lot. I mean, like I mean,
it feels like a really, like, it feels like reading a Stephen King story. You know, where you're like, what the fuck?
Anyway,
why
it's
is
just
there done, so much religion in this?
Like, as, like, anyway, I just, all I'm trying to say is that, like, as, yeah, I don't, as artificial as it is, as much an artifice, it still feels, it really works.
Yeah.
I mean, you get so much from Roxy in the little bit we see of her. We really get like 2-3 scenes before she kills herself. Spoiler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
but she does so much to the story.
Yes.
And of course, Grace Zabriskie, who plays her, is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I already, I'm like, you know, it's making me appreciate Brendan Fraser.
Yeah,
and
of course.
That's one of the points of doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that he's, you know, I know this is kind of around his peak, but like getting the douche Ian McKellen and then Grace Zabriskie and like how you, and he holds his own, you know. Like I don't think he's given all that much necessarily, but
like,
and you know, Zabriskie is I'm most familiar to people I think from Twin Peaks, and so you may think she doesn't have a lot of range because she kind of just plays
kooky.
Cracked, and she's got those eyes, you know, and the frizzy hair, but she's really got a subtle, I don't know, it's anyway, kudos to Fraser for
seriously, but like something that I really appreciated about his performance, and I think the way that
I just remembered that she was cast last,
shooting
had already begun,
before
they cast Roxy.
That's nuts. That's actually surprising to me.
Yeah, it is, because she's such a good fit.
Yeah. So something that I really think that Brendan Fraser is able to capture in this is the, like, it's super interesting because, so he's like, you know, super religious, or the Darkly is super religious, you know, grew up like that, grew up with dogma, grew up, you know, believing this. And so Callie's kind of rocking his world a little bit. Like, she's, you know.
So to speak.
Well, yeah, but she's, like, being really nice to him. And it's something that's, like, this is also a thing that men get really confused about.
Mm-hmm.
If a girl isn't being super, if she's not, like, old enough to be your mom.
Right.
Then if she's being nice to you, then you're like, oh, we're going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it's this thing where, like, men aren't taught how to, like, have women be nice to them without it being sexualized. But she's also, I think, what I take it as, maybe I'm wrong, but, like, she's also, like, she's like, oh, let's go swimming. And he's like, don't take your clothes off. And she's like, why not? What does that have to do with anything? And I see that as her being like, but you swim naked. Like, that's how you're supposed to swim. And so mm-hmm. it's like their worldviews not matching. And he's like, no, no, like, that's not something that I, you know, that needs to happen. And she's like, okay, fine. Then I'll leave my slip on.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, that's fine, right? But, like, he's still seeing it as her, like, she to her, she's like, okay, well, I'll concede to make you more comfortable. But he's right. still seeing it as her being, like, a temptress.
Right.
I fucked that word up. I don't know exactly.
Temptress. Teamster.
Tupperware.
A real Rubbermaid.
So he starts to, like, obviously develop feelings for her. And I think, you know, like, he jacks it. Yeah, he jacks it. In the
bouncing up and down.
It really reminded me of, I had just talked about that scene in I Shot Andy Warhol, where, like, it's supposed to be Lily Taylor getting, you know, like, fucked really uncomfortably, yeah. But it's very clear that Lily Taylor's just bashing her own head against a wall. Like, they're trying to, you know.
Yeah.
And, like, it reminded me of that because he's, like, jerking off, but, like, his face is going up and down, and I'm like, that's...
Yeah, we see his face or, like, his eyes through the slats in the barn or whatever.
You know, we're getting the perception of him watching.
And he's just bouncing up and down, and that's like, meant to communicate the...
Like, are you
I don't know
jumping
why.
While you jerk off? Like,
we didn't
going
need
on?
That. It's clear. You see his hands go down his pants,
yeah.
And he's, like, groaning or whatever.
Yeah. I do love, though, when he's like, and then it just immediately cuts. That was really funny to me. So then Clay comes back, and his perception of her then shifts.
Right.
Because now she's a whore. Now right. she's, and then he meets Roxy, and all his feelings of jealousy, he won't acknowledge that he's jealous. It's yeah. Callie's fault.
Right.
And so Roxy's like, oh, she does that. She tempts you. And he's like, yes, this fits into all the negative things that I'm feeling. It's not my fault.
Well,
it's her fault.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't need to deal with these feelings. I need to shame her because I feel these feelings. And it really, I felt like it was such a great performance, like, because he has so little dialogue.
Yeah.
And so much is shown of just, like, his, like, just the way he looks at her and the way he behaves around her, not necessarily, like, even in the way he talks, but just how he's, you know, and when he wraps himself in barbed wire and then he's, like, wearing, like, all these, like, hot, you know, no one knows and everyone knows something's wrong with him. And
another
he's
thing
just,
I didn't
like,
get
he's
until
just, like, right.
Things I didn't understand either until the end of the film or watching the commentary. One, coffins. Two, that he was wearing the barbed wire the whole time. I thought he was getting sick from...
Oh. No, because you were... I was like, that's why they
himself.
Thought he was sick.
And then... I don't think you heard me say this because... Just this morning. But, like, when you see the parents...
Yeah.
His hallucinating of his parents.
Uh-huh.
I didn't put together until today that they're full of bullet holes.
You didn't get
I thought that was like decomposition is what that was supposed to be.
I see. Wow.
I'm perceptive.
Oh. Well, you weren't wearing your glasses though.
Not the whole time, no.
Yeah, so that's understandable.
Anyway, so it all, I mean, it goes where you think it's going to go. It escalates until Darkly cracks and paints himself red. You know, you see that coming a mile away. He's going to paint himself. No, I'm just kidding. And he takes, a thing pointed out in the commentary that I didn't think about is the tool, that giant ass planer or whatever, arrives at the same time as Darkly. Jude brings both of them to the compound, to the homestead is what how he keeps referring to it in the commentary.
Wow. Oh, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, so.
It's basically like the, you know, like a giant version of like the wood scraper. Like when you're like shaping wood, there's like a little, I've seen like a little one of that. It's literally like.
It's the size of a cricket bat.
Yeah.
Maybe longer.
Yeah. It's super interesting. I was super fascinated by it. I wonder if that's a real tool. I know. I loved it as a weapon, though.
Oh, yeah. It's a great weapon.
But.
Some people call it a swing blade. Swing blade. See, that's another one I do. Like Morgan Stern.
Anyway. So, I just want to say this because I know I'm going to forget. I keep being like, I want to say this. At the end. So, I was like looking. I was like purposely trying not to look at the trivia. I was like looking for like locations and I looked and I saw the dialogue and like the first one that like the preview of like dialogue or like quotes or whatever. From
like how IMDb has quotes.
Yes.
I hate that section, by the way.
And yes, I hate it. It's so stupid because the quotes of pigs are nonsensical.
Yeah.
But the first one I saw was her being like, I love you, Darkly. So I knew that was going to happen, but I didn't know when.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, and I was like not looking forward to hearing it. And then when it happened, I was like, whoa, this is actually really because he stops. Like he's about to kill her and she's like, I love you. And he stops.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't kill her. And I was like, oh, man, there's so many ways to interpret this. And I was like, at first I was like, do I like it? And then I was like, I do think I like it because I think it's super complex because.
Because of his response.
Well, because of his response, but also because I'm like, in that moment of fear.
Yeah.
There are so many things that you would say and feel.
Sure.
And it seemed so real to me that she said that.
Uh-huh.
You know, in that moment, like, of, like, forgiveness and, you know, because a lot of times, you know, I think with Christianity and stuff like that, like the main theme of things is, like, love and forgiveness.
Yeah, right.
And, like, I mean, it's not, the actions don't reflect the words,
sure.
But the words are all about love and forgiveness and all that shit.
But Jesus was all about that shit.
He was all about that shit. Jesus was like, this is the shit I'm all about. And then he was like, love, forgiveness, and all that shit.
He said, turn them cheeks. Let me see them cheeks turn in. Now the other.
He said, twerking for Jesus, to working for the Lord.
The mystery of what is she going to do with all that junk, all that junk in that trunk.
One time while working, there were a bunch of, while I was working at the art theater, there were one of the Catholic churches around here rented out the entire theater to play a religious movie. And so there were nuns there.
Wow.
And two hilarious things happened. One, for Kendall, I drew a nun, like with a big ass and like, you know, like movement, like little squiggles, like they were, and right. I wrote twerking for Jesus.
Got one.
Yeah. And so we were like, twerking for Jesus, twerking for the Lord. And like, we were singing that to each other. We made a song out of it.
All right.
Cause I drew that. But while they were like there, I drew this and like put it on the monitor so that you could see. But they couldn't see it cause we were behind a counter. Anyway, I'm really good at that.
Brilliant.
Kind of shit. I also drew one of my managers as a penis when I was a bank teller and I hung it up at my desk and you. I'm really good at being respectful.
Sounds.
Anyway.
Okay, we're going to take a break real quick. Be right back.
Okay, so I'm sure that you have heard me tell the story before, but I don't care because I'm telling it anyway. The Art Theater used to, in the 70s, show porn.
Yes.
Good Lord is...
People love talking about that.
Although one dude did come in and say that in the 70s, when it was a porno theater, he got his... He, like, basically got hired to mop the floors after... And he was like, so that's what I did. And I was like, I don't want to know that story.
Your name should be on a plaque.
Right. So anyway, there's like a... There was a picture on the wall of when it was...
Yes.
Yeah, of when it was a porno theater.
Yeah. I thought you were going to talk about the amazing mural of all the... Movie stars?
That does not deserve to be mentioned. So... These nuns are in the movie theater, and one of them finds the picture on the wall of when it used to be a porno theater. She loses her shit.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my God.
We're in a house of sin.
No. Oh no, it's amazingly better than this. She was like, oh, and we're like, yeah, we, you know, in the 70s, this place used to show porn. And she was like, oh my God. And so I was like, oh, this is hilarious. And she was like, this used to be a porno theater. And we were like, yeah. And it was me and RW working. Or like RW was there. And I had never been around nuns before. This was my first experience being around nuns. And so I was losing my shit. And he was just like enjoying me being like, I don't know how to take this in.
He was... used to being around nuns?
I don't know. He just didn't... He was just like, whatever about it. And I was like, ah. I mean, he's been around the... You know, he used to be in the military, so, like, he has lots of experience with lots of things.
Lots of nuns going to the service.
I mean, he's been other places and done things. And so he, you know, who knows what he has experience with. Anyway! So then the nun... who very clearly doesn't understand pornography, is like, and I expected her to be like, oh, this is horrible. I can't believe we chose this theater. She was like, how amazing is this? She was like, it used to be a theater that showed porn and now it's showing a film of God. She was like, this is, she was like.
It's been saved.
But she then was like, she was like, this is what happens. Like, God, you know, takes over and there's no more porn. She's like, theaters don't show porn anymore. We're winning. And RW and I were like, we looked at each other and we were like.
It's true.
Don't go on the internet. We're like, oh. She was under the impression that because. Porno theaters didn't exist. People didn't have as much access to porn any longer. And she was like, and now we're showing a Christian film in what used to be a porno theater. She was like, God is just, she's like, God is winning. And we were like, oh no.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And RW was like, don't tell her about the internet. And I was like, I was like losing my shit, and she knew I was losing my shit, and she thought it was really funny, so she kept talking to me because she knew I was like overwhelmed and had not been around, and she was like, oh, and RW was like, she's purposely talking to you because she knows that you're losing your shit, and I was like, somebody make it stop. Anyway, I found it. I don't know if I still have the physical copy, but I found a photo of twerking for Jesus.
Oh, nice.
I'll send that. Maybe I'll post it to Patreon. Maybe that'll be a Patreon exclusive.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Go on our Patreon so you can see my cartoon of a nun twerking for Jesus. So anyway, what were you saying about Darkly Past Noon? Yeah, that's fair. There's so much in this movie.
Yeah.
I just wanted to emphasize when I was talking about, like, the, like, how he, like, his perception of her... How I said this, but I want to really emphasize it because this is a Brendan Fraser fest.
Yeah.
Brendan Fraser did. I feel like Brendan Fraser's underrated in how. Like, I really do feel like so often he's shown as like. I feel like it's similar to a Keanu Reeves thing.
Yeah.
where he's like, oh, he's the pretty face. Like, oh, make him, you know, the dumb one in the corner. Mm-hmm. And, like, he can do so much more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, like, I was saying, like, when we were watching, when we watched Johnny Mnemonic, and, like, uh-huh. I was like, Keanu Reeves is one of the most fantastical physical actors. He can, like, he can, like, because I remember watching the scene where he's, like, in the bathroom and he's, like, really overwhelmed. I was like, oh, my God, I feel sick, like, watching this because he's, he's, like, getting, and I was like, oh, God, oh, God. And I'm like, oh, that's his performance. Like, this isn't editing. Like, he's performing. Like, he's in pain and going to throw up. And I feel like I feel sick watching this. I'm like, oh, he's actually fucking doing amazing.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that. I feel like with Brendan Fraser, like, there's so, it sucks. I talked about this in Gods and Monsters. It sucks to be, like, completely, have your body completely destroyed by the industry that was forcing you to have that body.
Right.
In the first place. But also, like, to completely overlook so much of your talent. Like, I think this, one of the reasons why I was excited to watch this is because, like, it was clear it was an indie film.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times with indie films, people do have more permission to perform, to, like, give a performance. And I felt like this was something that we were getting. Like, we actually got him performing and not performing as, like, muscular dude coming in and beating guys up. The funny guy's tripping, you know, that kind of thing. Like, he's, like, showing this. And the way he goes from being, like, super innocent and nervous to just being completely, like, yeah, I'm just going to come kill you.
Yeah.
It's so believable. It's so believable. It doesn't ever feel like it's jumped. It doesn't feel like
a perfectly natural evolution.
And some of that, yes, is editing and directing and, you know, like, the pacing and stuff like that. But none of that could have happened without him performing at that. And he makes it so fucking subtle the whole fucking time. And there's so much that he's just like, he's, sorry, there's a gnat in my face. There's so much that he's just like presenting and like there's close-ups of just his eyes and like there's so many things where, and he's just like, able to carry this, like, and I think if it was anyone else doing this, I don't think it would have been, I think it would have felt really out of place.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, and I do feel the same way about Ashley Judd, though. I feel like Ashley Judd did really good. I really liked her.
I have mixed feelings about her being cast in this. I don't dislike her.
You seem like
I think she's very competent as an actor, but it's confusing casting to me. I mean, a little bit, it's the role.
Well, I was just going to say this lines up with how she was perceived at this time, I think, in the 90s.
Yeah, well, I don't feel like I have that baggage.
Interesting.
Because I was not even aware of her, I don't think, until.
It's bonkers to me. Like, that's wild.
I wanted to say about Brendan Fraser, though, like, in that, I linked to it in the Gods and Monsters episode, interview from 2018.
Yeah, I was thinking the one
which
you sent
is
me.
Where he is the first time he publicly talks about being assaulted.
Yeah.
But the writer, Zach somebody, talks about how a lot of the roles he got cast in is because he's so good at he has this look about him where he's like new to the world. Mm-hmm. And that's so many of the roles he does, like this one and Encino Man and just Airheads. He's kind of like, you know, he's always kind of a innocent.
Born Sexy Yesterday a little bit.
A little bit,
yeah.
Like, he's hot, but he's also like, what?
He's hot. No, like, he's gay, you know.
Anyway. Yeah. But yeah, that's it. He's like an innocent.
Yeah.
But
yeah, for sure.
But not. He's usually given a little more than that. Not just, he's not playing someone with a disability.
Right. Bedazzled. We have to watch Bedazzled.
Okay. I didn't.
That's a movie that's like, I think it's not, I remember feeling like it wasn't as funny to me, or was it? It didn't have like.
Remind me what it is?
It is, he like makes a deal with the devil or something like that. I don't know. It's not that, it's a comedy movie.
Yeah.
He plays like a different
he played like he basically is like he makes a wish and then his life changes and it's all the ways it's basically like monkey's paw kind of thing. Like he makes a wish and then, you know, it goes wrong and he's like, oh, no, I'm wishing for this instead or no, I want this instead.
But aren't there like. Okay.
And so the scenario, he'll be like, I want to be, you know, famous. And so he's like a famous basketball player, you know, but like he has like a, you know, it's a great joke. But I think it's like the monkey's paw is that he has a really small penis. Oh, well. But he's playing racist. A giant baseball player or basketball player. Sorry. And he's like really tall compared to everyone else. Yeah. And it's like very clear that it's like. You know, he's like, I don't know, on stilts or something. I don't know. He's just like, and then he's playing like, yeah, it's just, it's seeing him perform all of these characters.
Oh, nice.
Like there's one where he's like, I think like a Spanish drug dealer, but he only speaks Spanish, but he doesn't know Spanish. And he's like, what is this? I'm speaking Spanish. How does this happen? You know? And he's like, whoa, this seems so natural. I'm doing it so well. Anyway, it's like. It's just thing, whatever. It's me describing it is not hilarious at all. And the movie itself isn't that funny. But Brendan Fraser performing as all of these different characters.
Right.
Is what makes it compelling. Like, I don't think the movie is like a comedy. Like, it's not that fun. I don't remember it being that funny.
Mm-hmm.
But watching him perform as all of these things, like, I've been really wanting to rewatch it. But yeah, anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, the other thing I wanted to say, though, is there's that there's a shot. I don't remember when it is, but it's him and Judd facing each other, but we see him on the side, and he looks so huge and hulking
compared
to her. And, man, after watching Gods and Monsters, I'm like, I cannot not see him as the monster.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean?
Like,
anytime
he's clomping around and trying to look big, that's all I see.
Yeah. Oh, man, but the way he was standing on that, I was like, oh, my God, this is so... perfectly because that was like a good shot where he was just he looked so menacing and scary and he looked like dangerous and it was really interesting. I liked about that is because she's like she comes after him and then it's very clear that she sees that his perception of her has changed. And then when he turns around and he like steps for her, she steps back and she's like, what's this? She's like, whoa. But you're seeing that in how, like, you see how much he towers over her and how much bigger he is.
Right.
And you become like, you're like, oh shit. You know, it does such a great job of making you afraid.
Because otherwise
for
you
her.
Don't, you haven't.
Yes.
Gotten that sense of their physical differences from how it shot previously. Yeah, so,
And
good point.
Does such a good job of you suddenly being like, she might be in danger. Like, oh shit.
For the first time, you feel like...
Right, you really feel like it's changed.
Yeah, it's shifted.
And yeah. Would you recommend?
Oh, for sure. I mean, like...
Good luck getting a hold of it.
Yeah.
Ooh.
After I... Listen to the commentary, and like even the director's like, he'll do interviews, and he's like, people are asking him about his lost film, meaning
bonkers.
This one. And I'm guessing it didn't actually get a theatrical release.
Yeah, I don't.
From what he said,
yeah,
he said
sure.
It did well on the festival circuit, but that's.
Well, he said no one else really knew how to take it, so I don't really or knew how to.
Yeah,
like,
which I don't.
I don't know what that means. I assumed people weren't interested in seeing it because reviewers didn't know how to talk about it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I don't know if that means that they didn't see it in the theater or if they weren't like seeing it out in the
I don't know.
Yeah.
Can I go through my notes?
Please.
Please.
I would recommend it as well. I think it's something that like I think
yeah, let me know if you. I'll burn you a copy.
Yeah, literally.
I got the DVD, and I'm so glad I did, especially for the commentary. And I'm so glad I listened to that.
It is really, really.
And it's a beautiful transfer.
Yes, it's beautiful, but it's also like, it's actually like I wasn't expecting this. It's actually really pretty. Like it's wildly oversaturated throughout the entire film, which
was
very
little,
surprising to me.
I was a little shocked that it was film.
Yeah. Right. I was sitting there.
Given how saturated it was.
I knew that it was because it was obviously from 1995. They weren't really doing digital, especially not for indie movies.
Sure.
Like, not like
couldn't
that.
Afford it.
Yeah.
Wasn't cheap yet.
Yeah. So I figured that, but I was like trying to figure out. I'll have to Google this and figure it out. I'm like, how did they edit it like this in, like, because digital, obviously, you just take the clip and you oversaturate it or whatever. It's in the processing of the film. Okay, cool. But, like, right. But I'm like, which part of the process? And, like, how do you make it all match? And, like, how do you? Yeah. I'm like, so, because I don't know. I mean, I'm a photographer, but I've never worked with, like, actual, like, film.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. And I've never worked with, like, film in that way. I've obviously worked with film, but never worked
on
with film.
Film.
I never created a film with film. But yeah, there's some gorgeous shots in here. This is like one of my favorite kinds of film.
Well,
there's so many just shots of like
and turns
something
out,
pretty.
He went to college for painting. He was a painter, so he is very much about the images. And
makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It makes a lot of sense.
I liked what he said too, and I was like, "Yes." He said, "If it doesn't have like pretty images, or like if it doesn't have pretty scenes to look at, it shouldn't be a film."
Yeah,
and I was like, "Fuck yes, that's
right.
Exactly it."
It could be a novel. It could be a radio play.
Yeah, he's like, "Whatever, it shouldn't be." And I was like, "Absolutely."
Yeah, he says for him, like that's why the plot is very simplistic.
100%.
Which he says. And that was an intentional.
Yes.
Intentional. He was like, for me, it's just I want an excuse to shoot
yes.
these images.
Yes.
And there are so many that you can tell are
purposefully done. Yeah.
Also, the house on fire at the end—that's actual fire. It's
yeah.
There's like no CG in this.
No. Yeah.
And everybody running around a fire.
Yeah.
Or actually running through flames and shit. And he's talking about, like, in the commentary, he's talking about, like, yeah, eventually they got sort of desensitized to it.
Yeah.
And you can see, he's like, see Lauren Dean running up the stairs here, like, nothing, running through flames. He was like, that's because we were all used to it by that point.
I liked how he said people were, like, pulling him out of the way because
yeah.
he was getting super close
to,
like, the
flames.
He
was about to back into
a burning
cabinet
yeah.
or something.
Also, something that I found was really interesting. Keep saying something that was really interesting though, but what I thought was really interesting about them. So
you think that's interesting?
Yeah, you think
wait
that's
till you
really
hear
interesting.
This thing I'm gonna
this
say.
Is actually really interesting. something that I think was, I guess, exciting to hear about because, like, I feel like nowadays this doesn't happen. This isn't something that's a fear. This isn't something that anybody really has to worry about. Any longer when making, especially when making independent films.
Running out of actual film?
They were literally like, they were like, by the end of the film, like the last scenes that were shot, he literally said that he was like, they were like literally like
picking
searching.
Picking shit up off the floor,
yeah.
going through old canisters.
Yes, and like, finding like little scraps of film that didn't have anything on them to use to be able to film the end of the fucking movie. I'm like, that's like some like hardcore shit right there. And
it
that
is.
Was like super impressive to me.
Yeah.
And
I know.
Honestly, he's barely in it. Quincy's a great fucking character.
Oh my God.
Quincy's such
so
a great
good.
Character.
I'm going to put his whole fucking monologue in here because I love it so much.
It's Quincy, old man. Are you listening to me?
Now that's the second time you've called me old, young lady. And I have you to know that you are as young as you feel. And I feel like a baby. Well, I'm a baby of death. Corpses keep me juvenile. Misery is money. And grief, well, that's a miracle. Well, how do you do, young sir? Jude told me he found a little lost thing on the brink of death. And I said the brink would never do. Couldn't you push him all the way?
Lee, this is Quincy. He's the undertaker.
The impresario of undertakers, my dear. I get the dead, and I scoop out their smelly bits.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I stitch them up and package them in overcoats of wood made by the wonderful clay here.
Aunt Lee.
Well, of course. Now, I don't charge much. I make dying a luxury, if not a necessity. Well, it's the most economical thing you'll ever do.
Come on, let's get out of the heat.
Okay. What do you have in this house to drink? Or who do you have?
Good God.
But no, he only had the steady cam for an afternoon.
Oh, my God.
And one of the ones they shot was Quincy's scene.
Yeah.
You could, and, you know, that's why
it
pans around. It's one shot.
Oh, and that must be why it might be why it looks a little bit different.
Yeah.
That's wild. Yeah.
And
you said she looked like one of those like
blow molds.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's what they're called, but those plastic anyway. Because the color's so blown out. Yeah, and apparently the Quincy is just amazing. That guy Lou
absolutely.
Myers is the guy who played him. Showed up, delivered that.
So good.
I love that they gave him the space to do that.
Oh my God, yeah. He was the whole fucking, like, he had the most, like, he was the most fleshed out character out of everyone.
Pretty much, yeah.
Which is impressive because he's like the singular person of color in the entire fucking movie.
True. And he does a great job representing.
Yeah.
I picked up on this, like, I didn't read it. Philip Ridley refers to it as like a sci-fi dystopia kind of thing. But there's all these references to, like, so the coffins is one. Mm-hmm. And then Quincy shows up and he's talking about people are starving to death.
Yeah.
There's no work. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Ridley
is talking about, like,
In the beginning, Callie, he was like talking about Callie going to town and she's like, at least you have a job.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm like, oh, and I that really struck me because I was like,
yeah, I'm like, well, is this set during the Depression or
what's the deal?
But yeah, the more I listen to the commentary and think about it, and you know, like the ideas that
I was wondering about that because there's so many references to like, he was like, people are dying and everyone's like, nobody cares anymore, and like the world's like, and it both sounds like religious. This is what made it so interesting. It both sounds like religious zealotry.
Yeah.
As well as just describing like normal people functioning,
is the
well
rapture happening?
Right, as well as like an apocalyptic description. But what's interesting is that like
also King-esque in that regard.
What?
Stephen King.
Oh yeah, correct. I was like, I don't know that reference.
I have a dream.
Kafka-esque.
I don't know her.
So. But the way, I feel like it's described kind of differently by, so the way Quincy describes it is that like people are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Like people are starving, people are dying.
But it's also like grief is good business.
Well, yes, yeah. But no, what I'm saying is his description of the outside world.
Yeah.
He's like, people are dying, people are starving, like there's not enough for everyone, like, you know, like we're in a really bad state. And also he describes their places like being very different from the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
He's like, you have food, you have these things that no one else seems to have. But when Roxy's talking about it, she's like, I don't remember exactly what she says, but the way she describes it is like, people don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Like there's no, and it's like her description of it is like, oh, everyone has lost their morality.
Yeah. Right.
And Quincy's description of it is like people are suffering. So it was like a really interesting thing where like religious people will talk about it in the sense of like people are suffering because of their own moral failings.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people are suffering that it must be that no one cares anymore. It must be that, you know, the devil's taking over because that's the only reason you'd be suffering so bad. So it's all this like your fault that it's suffering. But like people who don't have that like religious indoctrination are like, wow, there's so much suffering in the world. People don't deserve to suffer this way. And there's no morality given to the suffering. Like, it's just like suffering is bad. And what I mean is like, there's no morality given to like the people that are suffering. It's that not like you must have done something to deserve the suffering. You know, it's like suffering is what is bad. Not the people suffering, you know? And it's just, it was like a really interesting, again, I don't know how purposeful it was, but it was very, it felt like really like the way he describes it versus the way he describes it is like, is what stuck out for me. The way she describes it is how people, Christians just talk about everything that's not Christian.
But it's also of interest given all that, that it's, He says, my father was a preacher. He taught me how to preach.
Yeah.
You start slow and low, and then you get higher and more and louder, which is what the movie does also. Right. That's the arc of the...
But also, I like the way Ashley Judd responds to that, because she goes with him, like, as if she knows she's been told this by him before, which I was like, I liked it because it was like, it created this rapport with them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was, I so much about this movie is like, just fucking watch it.
Yeah.
I remember this. I've been wanting to say this since we watched it last night. I honestly think part of the way the movie is like confusing, or like may have been confusing, is music. I think if it had I think if it had better music, this movie would be a hit. This would be like, people would be like, oh my God. But there's a lot of like kind of, the music doesn't feel like it's one continuous thing. It changes, but it doesn't always feel like it matches what's going on, which I assume is what he wanted.
It doesn't follow a lot of the language you expect from a movie, yeah, right?
Correct. Like, and I feel like sometimes
you would expect a lot of strings, which there are definitely some orchestral string moments that happen. But then, like, Darkly's theme is kind of
all
synthesized.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like I keep expecting like a dub techno thing to happen, because it's like junk, 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 junk.
Yeah.
Like stereo.
There's
hard pan. Chords that are repeating, and then like it's electronic.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly not.
And I mean, I'm just saying, like, I'm assuming this is from the way the director describes how he wanted this movie to be seen. Like, he doesn't want it to be real. He wants it to be surreal. He wants it to be completely confusing and not follow like a story. Right. So it makes sense that the music would do that.
Yes.
But for me, I was like, oh, if the music was different in this scene, this would be devastating. This would be absolutely devastating. This movie would be like, I don't say this, I'm not trying to like shit on the movie at all. I think it was great. But I think if the music was better, this would probably be one of my favorite movies. Like, truly, like now watching it, I'd be like, yes.
I know. The language that popped into my head when we finished was like, this movie is almost genius.
Yeah, exactly.
And the things about it, like, I think that's one of the ambiguities or discomforts about the film itself is like, you can't tell, like, you have Brendan Fraser, you have Ashley Judd, you have Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
Grace Zabriskie, all
people
we know and have seen in much more bigger, successful things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's like unclear the competency of the filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like, it feels amateurish in a lot of ways.
Right.
And like, for me, I think one of the, you talk about the music, which is one element that doesn't feel like a polished.
Correct. Yes.
You know, like, some
does it feel like a finished product?
Yeah. And to me, the editing sort of undermines a lot of it, which, again, it was clearly a choice.
Yeah.
But like, sometimes it really works, and sometimes it is almost comical, or
like,
is comical.
Like, the things that, like, the scene, so when Brendan Fraser is, like, when she, like, walks away from Brendan Fraser, and he's going away, and then suddenly it edits, and he's not there.
Yeah.
And then it shows him walking away. I think it would have been insanely more, like, jarring if it just cut and he was gone and you didn't see him again. I'd be like,
it's already pretty drunk. But to me, it's like, it's similar to the climax of Manhunter.
Yeah, for sure.
This was a choice.
Yep.
I don't know if it does what you wanted it to do. But
this
you
was
committed.
A choice. You made a choice, and that choice has been made.
So kudos.
By you. Right. Yeah.
For taking some risks.
Yeah. I just,
yeah, watch it. Hit me up. I'll burn you a copy if you want, because it's hard
to
come by.
Yeah,
I got
it
on a Blu-ray. It's a screener. So don't tell the industry. Don't tell Arrow.
Yeah. I hope this gets, I mean, I know that we're not like super popular, but I really hope this gets people to watch this movie.
Yeah, watch this movie.
This was like, I hope it gets.
I have so many notes from the commentary.
That's
maybe bonus content.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can read it, and then you can just trim it.
Let's do our sign off, and then I'll do it.
Oh, whoa. Let's
Good enough.
Do our sign off. What?
Is that not a dagger or a crucifix I see. You hold so tightly in your hand, and all the while the distance grows between you and me. I do not understand.
Amy Larry.